everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 324. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in thisshowisogay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What a great show we have for you this week. We must get started with our very enthusiastic guest. Troy Williams is the executive director of Equality Utah, an organization that has as its mission to secure equal rights and protections for LGBTQ individuals and their families right there in the great state of Utah. Troy has over a decade of experience as a community organizer for the LGBTQ community. He was the community affairs director of 90.9 FM KRCL for 10 years. He's no stranger to radio. He was the executive producer and host of Radioactive. He created and produced Now Queer This, which aired on KRCL from 2006 to 2007. His work has been featured all over the place, including Salon, The Nation, just everywhere. In 2010, the Salt Lake Tribune dubbed him, quote, the gay mayor of Salt Lake City, which better be on his resume. He's appeared on Anderson Cooper 360, State of the Reunion, and the 2012 Showtime special, Larry Wilmore's Race, Religion, and Sex. He's co-written a one-woman show, The Passion of Sister Dottie S. Dixon, and Troy won the Utah Broadcaster Association's awards in both 2013 and 2014, and even in 2013, the Allies Award right there from Equality Utah. He was also the producer on the TLC original series Breaking the Faith, and now he is here with us. Troy Williams, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh my God, I'm exhausted by all that.
And that is all the time we have for this week's
episode,
everyone. Thank
you all, everybody. Come visit Utah.
Oh, we'll get to Utah. We'll get to Utah because I have a whole segment where you're going to have to be the tourism board. But let's start with you, Troy Williams. As I read your bio, as everyone just heard your bio, how do we trace this back? What did little Troy Williams want to be when he grew up?
Well, I wanted to be a missionary for the Mormon Church, and I did. I don't know if you've seen the musical.
But I have.
Yeah, that was me. I was in the white shirt and the tie and the missionary tag going out to convert the world to Mormonism. I went to England for 2 years and I tried really hard. And then I came back and I'm like, I grew up in Oregon and I was always afraid of this kind of nascent, lurking queer sensibilities, within me.
Yeah.
And so I moved to Utah to go to Brigham Young University so I could once and for all be amongst my own people. And then there was this gay thing just came bursting out of me and, found myself on sort of, on the outside of my faith and the church that I grew up in. And so I just thought, I'm going to change the world. Let's do it. And so I became an activist and organizer, working at, as you said, at Carousel Radio, which is a great progressive station here in Salt Lake City. And and here I am.
Wow. So the Mormon thing, that's not a metaphor. This thing actually happened.
It's real.
It's
Mormonism
real.
Exists. It's real. It's not a metaphor.
So going from Oregon to Utah, I would imagine that was quite a change for you.
Well, yeah, totally. I grew up in Eugene, Oregon. It's sort of the Berkeley of Oregon, right?
Yeah.
And it's super progressive. And then I moved to one of the most conservative states in the nation and decided to do LGBTQ activism in one of the most conservative states in the nation. So I don't know if that's like masochism. I don't know what that is. Or just pure idealism. I don't know.
Troy, if you want to lay down on a couch during this interview, we will work through these issues together.
Work me through all of this. I need help.
Now, in 7+ years of doing this show, I actually have not really had that many opportunities to talk to folks who have actually worked and have an appreciation for radio. It strikes me that you are one of those people.
I may be, yes. I love radio. I love it. It's an intimate form. You get to sort of converse with people and really connect. And that's actually truly what shaped me is when I worked at KRCL, doing this show called Radioactive, you know, I thought I'm going to bring the most left-wing people I can think of. So I'd do shows with like Angela Davis or Howard Zinn or, you know, just Amy Goodman from Democracy Now.
Yeah.
We'd bring all of these people on there. So I'm like, Utah needs progressive voices to sort of balance out things. And just having these amazing people that I would talk to all the time on multiple issues, from the environment to labor rights to, you know, reproductive rights, really I started to see the intersection of issues. And it kind of, I think, for a while radicalized me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I would start organizing and doing protests, and that's kind of how I made a name for myself here in Utah.
I don't want to go with any stereotypes of the great state of Utah, but it strikes me you probably ran into some resistance in producing that content.
Absolutely. Well, you know, KRCL has this – it's a station that's been around for 35 years, and this station was one of the very first stations in the nation to actually run a pro-LGBT show. It was called Concerning Gays and Lesbians. It came on the air in the 80s. When the AIDS plague was decimating our community, when Reagan was in power,
right.
And people in Salt Lake City just really, really embraced it. And that's what's so unique about Salt Lake City, is it's really a home and a haven for the counterculture.
Yeah.
And if you go back into the 80s, you've probably seen the film SLC Punk, right?
Of course,
The punk scene was huge in the 80s. The straight edge scene was huge here. And the LGBT community has always been huge here and very unified. And I think that the strong Mormon hegemony, the Republican dominance, has really created a kind of cohesion amongst the progressive community. So that Salt Lake City is very, very liberal. It's very progressive.
All right. Well, before we talk about Equality Utah, on behalf of the Board of Tourism there in Utah, sell me on Utah. I've never been to Utah. I have the sense that the Olympics were there once, and
That's right.
Actually is pretty much the totality of what I know about the state of Utah.
It's a stunning state, and I mean, we have this right outside of my window are these incredible Rocky Mountains, and it's just stunning geography. Down south, we have Zion's National Park, we have Moab, there's amazing red cliffs and red rock, and we have deserts, and it's just a stunning landscape. And people who move here fall in love with it. And that's what is kind of this kind of people just don't know. It's like one of the nation's best-kept secrets that Utah is where you actually want to live.
There you go.
And people think, oh, Mormons, Republicans, conservatives. No, they're awesome. It's great.
Because I'm sitting here thinking Mormons, Republicans, conservatives, no.
And here is where the work needs to be done.
Exactly.
See, as I said, the Mormons trained me to be a missionary. All right? So now I'm kind of a gay missionary, reaching out to Republicans, reaching out to Mormons, and trying to help them sort of work through these issues. And my life kind of come full circle in that regard.
I would imagine that there had to have been some people in your life who have said to you, what are you doing? There are easier places to get this work done.
All the time. But this is where it needs to happen. Utah, the Mormon Church, were one of the principal organizers of California's Proposition 8, right, back in 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
And because they're aggressive organizers, Mormons are, and they really tipped the balance in California. We all were watching the Proposition 8 initiative, and we all thought, oh, it'll never happen in California. It'll never happen, and it did. And we here in Utah were devastated when we began to see how much money, millions of dollars, flowing from the state of Utah into California. And we made a choice there that we were going to mobilize and organize our community like never before, and that we were going to engage our, quote-unquote, political adversaries.
Yeah.
And we were going to win them over. And that's exactly what my predecessors here at Equality Utah started to do. And we began to reach out to the Mormon Church and the Republican power structure. Now, keep in mind, Utah's house, the state house, is 87% of the state Senate are Republican. 87%. 84% of the House are Republicans, and almost all of them, maybe even 90% of the entire legislature, belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who have not always been great allies to the LGBT community. So that's the task ahead of us. How do we move them? I can talk to progressives all day long, and they will all agree with me, and yes, and we'll go to a political rally, and we'll get our signs out, and we'll march. But we decided that we were going to engage those people who were our political adversaries. And so my predecessors started out doing outreach to the Mormon Church, and we began a series of dialogue. And I had some, we had some help as well. Destin Lance Black is a great friend of ours, and he would come to Utah as well and would kind of be a gay ambassador, if you will. And we started actively engaging the LDS Church.
There you go. At some point, Troy Williams was sitting down somewhere, I would imagine it was looking at the Rocky Mountains, and said, I'm going to make this shift from broadcasting to nonprofit work. Is that how this went down?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I had worked in radio for 10 years, but I was always an organizer. I was always putting together political rallies. And in fact, in 2014, we tried to get our non-discrimination bill passed, and it was the sixth year running the bill, and they had blocked us out. They shut the bill down. They wouldn't even let us have a hearing. So I organized a bunch of my friends, and we went and we blocked the doors at the governor's office in the state capitol, and we got hauled away in handcuffs and thrown in jail for protesting up at the capitol. And it was really kind of this great balance that started happening. We would be really, the activists would be really sort of rowdy, and we would do all of these, we do stunts. We do kiss-ins on the church property. We do marches and got arrested. And while we were doing that, then that created an opening for Equality Utah to kind of come be the moderate voice, kind of play the good cop.
Yeah.
And so they would talk to them. And then my predecessor, Brandy Balkin, who is just amazing, fantastic ED of Equality Utah, she took a job at Gill Action and moved to Denver, and the spot came open. And I'm like, I am going to do this. I'm jumping into it. I was in the Castro getting drunk with my friends with Kate Kendall from NCLR, and who's also from Utah.
Yeah.
And Kate's like, Troy, you need to become the next ED. And I'm like, and I'm drunk. I'm like, yes, I am doing it. So here I am, a year later.
I would like to take this opportunity to either remind or inform you, Troy, that your board of directors is using this interview as your annual review. So the
I actually had that tonight.
Yeah.
The annual
review is tonight.
Oh, no. What am I doing?
I don't know how the drunk and arrested stories are going over with them. We'll find out.
Exactly. Well, they know me. They're on to me already.
Well, you're coming up on a year. You're coming up on a year as the executive director. It's coming up soon. How did you go about setting your goals of this is what I'm setting out to accomplish in my first year? And also, how'd you do?
Well, let's see. A marriage equality came to Utah. We passed the first non-discrimination ordinance. All that's happened after I've been hired. Pretty damn good.
There you go.
But certainly not me that has done this. We have this amazing community here, and Equality Utah is this great machine and really passionate organizers that work here. We have this amazing out gay senator up on Capitol Hill, Senator Jim DeBacus. He is a character in and of himself, and he's been a driving force for all of this. Our community is so tight-knit, and so the credit for all of these things goes to many people. I just am fortunate to fill these shoes for a short time.
Nice. We've had just the great opportunity of talking to so many of your colleagues who are doing this statewide LGBT work, and certainly you've hinted at it quite a bit. What is different about doing LGBT work there in the state of Utah? How would you approach it differently with regards to organizing and technique than your neighbors in other states?
Yeah, well, it kind of depends on the demographic of your state, but I think when you come from a red state, you have to shift gears a lot. And so we recognize that we have to sort of focus on what we have in common. And surprisingly, there's a lot of things that we have in common. So when I sit down with a Mormon or a Republican or whoever, I just have these conversations about the things that we all value. We all value the ability to work and to contribute back to our community. We all value living in safe neighborhoods, sending our children to safe schools.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to achieve the American dream.
Yeah.
To have opportunities. And so we just shift gears like that, and we talk in their language and find out how can we connect. Now, when the LDS Church was involved with Proposition 8 and I was out protesting, they publicly said, hey, look, we do not, we're not opposed to protections for the LGBT community in workplace and housing. And that was a little window, a little opening kind of cracked through. And we recognize, hey, we don't have agreement on marriage.
Yeah.
But they are willing to come to us and say we will support legislation for housing and non-employment. And we're like, yes, we'll take it. And initially what they did is they endorsed Salt Lake City's municipal ordinance in 2010 and publicly came out and endorsed this. And that created this domino effect throughout the state. Municipality after municipality began to pass these non-discrimination ordinances. Now, they were symbolic. They didn't have a lot of strength, but they really moved the needle for us.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, 72% of the state, before we knew it, supported the passage of a statewide bill in Utah.
Wow. Wow.
So, and we, you know, we would go to these really conservative towns in Provo and Orem, and we would just make our case. And we'd have people from Provo, you know, make the case to the mayor and win them over.
Do you use your background as a missionary, or is that something that you don't bring
to
the forefront?
Absolutely.
You
do, always bring it to the forefront. You know, these are my people. You know, I'm not a believing Mormon anymore, but these, my family, you know, belong to the LDS Church.
Right.
Many of my friends still do. So this is my heritage. It's
right.
They're my people still, and so I like to actively engage them. And that this is where the really hard work is, because they're scared. The world's changing so rapidly, and I really resist this kind of idea that they're full of hate. All right,
yeah.
There are people who are haters, right? There's a Westboro Baptist Church.
Sure, sure.
But most Christians and most Mormons aren't filled with hate. They're filled with fear, uncertainty. The
yeah.
world is changing. They don't know what's going to happen, what will be the consequence of gay marriage. And it's irrational, right? And so we, you know, let's engage them, recognizing that, not calling them bigots, not calling them homophobes, not further alienating them, but actually trying to build a bridge. And something beautiful happened in 2012 that just rocked our world here in Salt Lake City. Dustin Lance Black was our grand marshal, and I was going to drive him in the front of the Pride Parade.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these group of Mormons who had applied to be in the parade. And they wanted to come into the parade, and they came and they talked to me, and they said, we're going to dress up in our church clothes. It's a Sunday morning, and we're going to come, and we're going to sing hymns in the Pride Parade. I was terrified for them. I mean, the tension between the gay community and the LDS community was at an all-time high. And I'm like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. And then I was talking to Lance about it, and he's like, let's just bring them to the front of the parade.
Yeah.
And so we invited them to the front of the parade, and what happened was historic. When we turned and we started marching together, the crowd, thousands of people lining up the streets of Salt Lake, started bawling. And the Mormons started crying. And Lance and I started crying. And there was this beautiful moment of reconciliation. And when, you know, people would hold up signs that said, LDS, heart, LGBT. Or one person held up a sign that says, sorry, we're late. And it began this powerful transformation here in this state of Mormons reaching out to LGBT people. Because so many of us who grew up in Utah grew up in LDS homes.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but Mormons have a lot of gay babies. And they have a lot of trans babies.
Yeah.
And so for whatever reason, I always tease Mormons. I'm like Heavenly Father, that's how they call God, is sending gay babies into your household to teach you a very special message about love.
I love that that's your dissertation. This is great. This is great stuff. Again, listeners, we're here with Troy Williams, the Executive Director of Equality Utah. Again, it just strikes me in just talking to you, Troy, this work is so categorically different in Utah than it is in some of the other states and some of the other executive directors with whom we've had on the show. But I would imagine that you guys are not an anomaly, and instead, can we put forth that there's something that, even as different as it is doing this work there in Utah, that other states could learn from?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you go to states that are very similar to us, Arizona or Idaho, for example, Montana, they're all very close to us regionally, that you have very Christian, very, you know, faithful kind of populations, very conservative. And I think we have to be willing to engage them. Now, here's a perfect example. A month ago was the Republican State Convention here. And so Equality Utah, we buy a table. Yeah. And we set it up right next to the Utah Eagle Forum, which is like the most staunch anti-gay organization.
Nice.
And we're there passing out our literature. We had these stickers that said Liberty and Justice for All. And we were putting them on delegates all over with our logo. And we just have these really robust conversations about the things that we have in common. And about 25% of the folks were hostile toward us, but 75% were actively engaging us in pleasant, awesome conversation. This is about being a missionary, going into the spaces where you think you're not welcome and asserting yourself there.
Yeah.
And that's what I think what you do, and what I think other conservative red states need to be doing as well.
Yeah.
And I tell my progressive friends, whether they're environmental groups, I'm like, why aren't you hanging out with the Republicans?
Because there's change there.
That's who you need to reach out to.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I never thought about it before.
We've spoken to many of your colleagues before about the challenges in getting volunteers of color involved, reaching out to communities of color, really getting more voices at the table than are currently there. Talk to me about the work of Equality Utah and racial justice.
Always an issue. We're struggling with this nationwide.
Yeah.
How do we actively engage and work within those intersections of communities of color? We've got a great organization here in Utah called Familia, and they're relatively new, and they're these passionate organizers working. They're docu-queers, they call themselves, and they're working on the intersections of trans persons of color. You know, we're bringing them in. I have a meeting with them next Wednesday, and, you know, I'm going to see what resources that we have to provide for them, not to lead them, but to actually stand by their side.
Yeah.
And let them sort of, you know, guide us in what their needs are. It is a tremendous challenge that we're all working through.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you know this, Troy, but occasionally this work, particularly perhaps in a red state, can be difficult and can be a little bit draining. I'm not sure if you've encountered that. Yeah. Talk to me about how you recharge yourself and how you go about motivating your staff to keep going when we hit those walls.
Oh, my staff is so incredible, and I've just got this, you know, this team of fireballs, and they're so, they inspire me. They keep me going. You have to just really sink in to your mission, to what your values are, and you have to surround yourself with incredibly optimistic people. And we keep everything, no matter what we are facing. We don't see it as an obstacle. We see it as an opportunity. So, you know, we passed this historic legislation in working with the LDS Church to actually pass non-discrimination ordinance last March. And then, you know, a couple months later, the LDS Church said some really inflammatory things about the LGBT community, called our families counterfeits, et cetera. And it hurt us and was demoralizing. We'd done all this work, and then one of their leaders gets up and calls us counterfeit. What do? It's an opportunity. Our work is not done.
Yeah.
And when that happens, we have an opportunity to reach out to them and begin to continue the dialogue. And that's what we're going to keep doing. That and you must take vacations. Executive directors around. I just got back from Italy. Executive directors, I'm saying to all of you, go on vacation.
Yeah, I tell my students that all the time. I work in this field where people brag about, oh, look how many vacation days I didn't use. That's not impressive to me. That's actually really bad role modeling.
No, and you have to unplug. And you know, I've been in Italy for 2 weeks, and you know, I get really like caught up, and I get really frustrated about things. I mean, I'm being very positive, but yeah, obviously it is heavy. There are days when it's very heavy.
Yeah.
But you know, I was looking at the Syrian refugee crisis and what's happening there and the humanitarian disaster that's happening, and it puts things into perspective, right? It puts things, you're able to really sort of put your own pain and your own suffering into perspective to the global scale, and that really helps me to get outside of Utah and to get out of my own brain and my own little bubble and see the larger world.
Perspective is a great thing.
Yeah.
With our listeners all across the country, what the heck can they do to support the efforts of Equality Utah?
Well, you can always go to our website, equalityutah.org. You can always donate, of course. We've got so much more work left to do. We're looking at we want to pass future legislation. We want to ban conversion therapy in this state. We have a really weak hate crimes bill that we want to make more robust, and that really will protect our community. We're not yet included in our state's public accommodations laws. You get equal rights on paper, but the most important work you got to keep doing is changing hearts and minds. So we have so much more outreach we need to do to Republicans, to Latter-day Saints, to bring them along on this journey with us. And so that's what we're going to do, and we'd love y'all to follow us as we do it.
I clearly need to educate myself. I'm a gay Jew from New Jersey. I know nothing about all this LDS stuff.
I know. Yeah, did you know that Salt Lake City, according to a recent Gallup poll, we are the seventh gayest city in America? 2016, I'm working to get that down number 6 or 5.
All right. We can get there. We'll get there.
We can get there.
What was the gay mayor of Salt Lake City thing, and indeed, is it on your resume?
Well, yeah, absolutely it's on my resume. But I'm very worried. I'm going to tell you something. We have the mayor's race coming up in November, and
okay.
The incumbent is Ralph Becker. He is a champion for the LGBT community. He was marrying people when we got gay marriage. But his opponent is named Jackie Biscupsy. She's a lesbian, and she could win.
Okay.
She could very much win. She was the first out legislator up on Capitol Hill, and she's been a pioneer for our community. Both of them, we have two great choices for mayor, but it's very possible that we might have a lesbian mayor in Salt Lake City, and then I'll have competition for the name gay mayor of Salt Lake City.
I feel like that was you campaigning against her in that moment. You don't want your titles on.
I'm neutral, but I know. What if she takes away my mantle? No, I wish her the best in the race. What a wonderful choice we have before us. And we'll probably be adding a second out LGBT to the Salt Lake City Council. So, this place is queering up quite nicely.
Look at that. Well, I will give you the floor, as I've given all your colleagues before you the floor, my favorite piece of these interviews, and you certainly mention your staff. I give you the floor to extol the virtues of your volunteers, your staff, your board there at Equality Utah.
You know, we are all driven by what I call irrational optimism. We know that the odds are stacked against us, but we don't care. We continue to fight for the world that we want to see. And that sums up how wonderful all of our staff, our volunteers, our board, we have irrational optimism, and we're going to change the world.
I love it.
So
I love it. All right, listeners, this is what you guys need to do. You need to stroll on over to equalityutah.org. If you are not inspired by the enthusiasm of Troy Williams, I'm going to put out there right now, you might be dead inside, because I think it's impossible not to be inspired by this enthusiasm. And Troy, we all well know it's not just you doing this work. There's just a ton of folks out there in Utah.
Absolutely.
Doing this work and moving the needle forward and making things safer for our LGBTQ brothers and sisters there in the great state of Utah. Please, please thank your staff and your volunteers and your board. And sir, thank you for the amazing work that you guys are all doing.
Great talking to you. Can't wait to come back.
Hello. My name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book. Hello, my name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago. It has so many awesome parts. You simply won't believe how much this book can change your life. Hello, my name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ. Hello, my name is Elder Young. Hello, did you know that Jesus lived here in the USA? You can read all about it now.
Hello,
in this nifty book, it's free, no, you don't have to pay.
Hello,
hello, my name is Elder Smith. And can I leave this book with you for you to just peruse?
Hello!
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 I'll just leave it here. It has a lot of information you can really use. Hello!
Hi!
My name is
Jesus Christ.
You have a lovely home.
Hello!
It's an amazing book. Don't you?
All right, folks, and we are back. How great is that? Troy Williams, Executive Director of Equality Utah. I mean, that is an energy that you just gotta love. You gotta love. And it takes all sorts of people to do work like this. You know, we have our extroverts, we have our introverts. It takes us all coming together. Next week, you guys are gonna hear from Jeff Graham, who is the Executive Director of Georgia Equality. So again, statewide work, but Utah and Georgia, I don't know if you guys know this, two very different states. So it takes a completely different skill set to do the work of LGBT equality in Utah as it does in the great state of Georgia. So we will hear from Jeff Graham next week, but my gosh, Troy Williams, what a treat to have him on the show. If you guys have anybody that you want to hear, if you have your statewide LGBT director who we have not yet featured, we would love to have them. Just drop us a line. Send me an email, ken@thisshowisogay.com, or just any guest ideas that you have. Always looking for new names as we plow ahead in these episodes ranging in the 300s. We want more people. We always want more voices to feature. For now, though, you are stuck with me for the rest of this week's episode. We certainly have quite a bit of time left, so let's cover all of this week's latest LGBT news out there. I guess all the drama right now, and I'm just going to briefly touch on this, is that the Vatican has confirmed that there was this secret meeting between Pope Francis and Kim Davis. I don't know, amid a six-day visit to the U.S. celebrated for calls of tolerance and inclusion, Pope Francis took time out of his schedule to hold a secret private meeting with the Kentucky clerk, Kim Davis, whose name just does not seem to stop trending. I wonder if maybe even by me covering this story, I am perpetuating the popularity of Kim Davis. I have a hard time believing that, you know, this is a show that's perpetuating that, but I don't know, this is a big deal. I didn't ask to speak to the Pope when he was here. I kind of just assumed that I wouldn't be able to get in as a gay Jew. I didn't think that I really would be rising to the top of the list, but I also wouldn't have thought that Kentucky clerk Kim Davis would have been able to get an audience with the Pope. So I don't know. It's either not that hard to get an audience with the Pope, but I think it is. I think it is. I kind of love the video of him stopping his little caravan there to hug the little baby Pope. If you haven't seen the baby Pope, it's a cute little video. But then it is very disappointing that he would take time out. He's been talking about tolerance all week long to meet with Kim Davis. So I think as we move forward, you know, her counsel, the Liberty Council, her lawyers are saying, you know, basically this is a group that honestly is not to be trusted because they release so many different lies. So they're saying, you know, this is what happened during the meeting, but who the heck knows? And the Vatican is just confirming that there's a meeting. I suspect as the days go forward, we will learn more and more. But yeah, sure, I'm disappointed. He's not my Pope. So there is a personal thing here where you're getting this through the filter of Ken Schneck, the gay Jew from New Jersey. Not my Pope. Not someone who really makes that much a difference to me, but I can see how many of my brothers and sisters in the Catholic faith are really disappointed he would take that much time out of his schedule to meet with Kim Davis. Very weird. Very weird. I would have thought it would have been harder, but I guess not. I guess not. Over in the state of Indiana, Indiana House Majority Leader Judd McMillan, who was a co-sponsor of the state's controversial religious freedom law, he just resigned his seat abruptly. So again, this is a guy who went out of his way to sponsor the religious freedom law, basically saying we need to be able to deny services to amoral gay people. I mean, that's the whole piece. They go against our religion. Yeah, a sexually explicit video starring the representative was sent via text message from his cell phone. The Indianapolis Star reported it is unclear who sent the text or how broadly it was distributed. This is the second time, apparently, that Majority Leader Judd McMillan has resigned from a job over a sexual misconduct allegation. McMillan was a rising star in the Indiana Republican politics, a conservative who also spoke out against marriage equality. He has opposed non-discrimination protections for LGBT people and co-authored legislation to prevent an LGBT youth group from obtaining a specialty license plate. In a prepared statement released this week, he said this, quote, "The time is right for me to pass the torch and spend more time with my family," end quote. Now, I do not revel in the downfall of politicians, but I do kind of subscribe to that ideology of people in glass houses. I just don't get it. I don't get how politicians can stand up there. Now, people who are arguing for tax codes, people are arguing for various policies, but when you are standing up there as a politician and trying to define this is who a family is, and this is who we should value, and this is who we should respect, and then behind closed doors, you are doing the opposite of that, you are setting yourself up for this downfall. And so it's hard for me to feel bad. I take no joy in this. I take no pride in the fact that this majority leader, I mean, this is no slouch. This is Indiana House Majority Leader Judd McMillan seems to have violated the law in this way and is certainly going to have some family problems moving forward. But it's hard for me to feel that bad for him. He put himself in that position, and not just as a politician, but for someone who has stood up time and time again to say, this is how we define a family. Well, part of how we define a family usually doesn't involve sexually explicit videos either, sir. And so we do need to broaden that just to include you, former Indiana House Majority Leader Judd McMillan. So again, no joy. I take no joy in this story. I'm just saying people in glass houses might not want to try to pass religious freedom laws. Putting that out there. Now, over on Law & Order SVU, there's a lot of all these LGBT storylines that are hitting all of these shows. I watched the premiere of Grey's Anatomy last week. Yes, I am one of those people. I'm still watching Grey's Anatomy. I am very invested. I understand that they killed off McDreamy at the end of last season. It was, of course, very upsetting to me, but I'm not going to distance myself, Grey's Anatomy. How could I? I love these people. I think they're real. I'm at the point where I think Grey's Anatomy is a documentary. It's where I was with ER. I accept my pathology, and I ask that you do the same. On the premiere of Grey's Anatomy, my gosh, did they have a gay storyline of these two lesbian patients who threw themselves in front of a train because their families were so lacking in an acceptance, and it was the whole storyline throughout the episode, and it was all about parental tolerance, and they also talked about reparative therapy, and it was really intense. It was right there on the premiere of Grey's Anatomy, millions and millions of people viewing. Same thing over on Law & Order SVU, a new episode, Transgender Bridge, focuses on a 15-year-old who is attacked by high school boys on her way home from school. According to the synopsis, quote, taunts and jokes intensify to pushing and shoving, leaving Avery in the hospital and three assailants under arrest. When the DA's office decides to try one of the culprits, 15-year-old Darius McCray, as an adult, the SVU squad agonizes over whether the punishment fits the crime and must deal with the pain of both families involved. Very exciting. Very exciting. So yeah, LGBT storylines all over pop culture, which is always a good thing. I just spent time tonight guest teaching in a college classroom for a diversity multiculturalism in education course, not my course, because I focus on college students. This was a course focused on K-12 teachers. And we talked about in this class, these were all students who want to be K-12 teachers. We talked about how, yeah, the rise of coverage in pop culture has made this a different society. We talked about how Glee single-handedly changed the way that younger generations talk about LGBT issues. For me, it was a little bit different. I know before me, you had the show Soap with Billy Crystal, and I often hear about Soap. That was a little bit before my time. For me, it was all about Melrose Place And it was all about Matt, the character Matt. He was the only gay character. He was the one they let him be gay, but that one episode where he was going to kiss somebody else, the camera had to pan away so that they were just specks and you couldn't really see them kissing, and it faded to black and went to commercial. Flash forward to Glee, and you have two high school students having sex and talking about having sex. I mean, the representation, and by the way, I don't know why I just focused on the most salacious aspects. You have all of these displays of pride, huge. Huge reality television, having LGBT characters, just being able to access LGBT people in society, whether it's on Grey's Anatomy or Law & Order SVU, huge. Really makes a difference. Absolutely, absolutely makes a difference. And that there are more LGBT people of color being featured, including on Empire, really, really big. Really, really big. On the other side of the spectrum, the New York City Police Department is again being accused of anti-LGBT harassment, as a new study indicates that homeless LGBT youth are being repeatedly harmed by NYPD officers. The Urban Institute surveyed 283 homeless LGBT youth in New York City who currently engage in survival sex, which is sex in exchange for shelter and food, and they found that 71% have had interactions with the NYPD, most of them negative and often turning physical. This is a quote from the report, quote, "This abuse consisted of verbal harassment, physical assault such as beating and choking, sexual assault including being propositioned for sex in exchange for release from custody and rape, denial of help when reporting a crime against police, and destruction or theft of personal property. In addition to physical injury, youth identified police violence as leading to psychological injury, including post-traumatic stress disorder." Wow. 70% of the youth said that they had been arrested at least once, usually for crimes like fare evasion. Of those arrested, 49% said they felt, quote, unsafe in the patrol car after the arrest and had experienced violence at the hands of officers. Meredith Dank, a senior research associate at the Institute, said that although this sample was specific to homeless LGBT youth in New York City, such experiences are not unique to them. She said this, quote, "This is happening on a national level. LGBTQ youth are experiencing police discrimination and abuse, especially those who are engaging in survival sex to have their basic needs met." So much more work to do there. Homeless LGBT youth are seven times more likely to trade sex than heterosexual youth, according to an earlier study conducted by the Urban Institute titled Surviving the Streets of New York. Again, homeless LGBT youth are seven times more likely to trade sex than heterosexual youth. It's incredible. You want to look up organizations who are really doing the work to help out homeless LGBT youth. The True Colors Fund, which is an organization that supports homeless LGBT youth, which was co-founded by Cyndi Lauper. Yes, that's right, Cyndi Lauper. They cite family conflict as the most common cause of LGBT youth homelessness. They put this out there on their website, quote, "For LGBT youth in particular, the conflict tends to be over their sexual orientation or gender identity. Half of all teens get a negative reaction from their parents when they come out to them. More than one in four are thrown out of their homes." Unbelievable. And just to be clear, and I said this to my students tonight, LGBT youth are disproportionately represented among homeless youth in the United States. According to the study, LGBT youth make up 5-7% of the overall youth population, but 20-40% of the homeless youth population. Again, they're 5-7% of the overall youth population, but 20-40% of the homeless youth population. There is so much work to be done. We had Maritza Martinez on the show a few weeks ago. I encourage you to go to theshowisogay.com and just click on either podcast, or you can click on guests and look up Maritza Martinez, who's doing incredible work with the organization Somos Familia, specifically on the intersection between Latino families and LGBT acceptance. But we spoke broadly on family acceptance, and it's so, so important that we talk about family acceptance, because there's a direct correlation between family acceptance and homelessness. We have these kids being 20-40% of the homeless youth population, and it's connected to the reactions of their family. More than one in four are thrown out of their homes. And then additionally, we have to take that next step and do trainings with the police. And New York City, I thought, was doing these trainings. I thought there was a gay officers league, and maybe that's not connected to trainings, but obviously more work to do there in New York City and more work to do in all of our police forces. That's something that you guys can do. People always write in saying, what can I do? How do I channel my energy? Here's something to do. Reach out to your local law enforcement and ask if they are provided any training on how to work with LGBT populations. There are people out there who do this training. We can get them that training. Write to me. I will refer you. But police officers desperately need this training. They're not getting it. Teachers desperately need this training. They're not getting it. Social workers desperately need this training. They're not getting it. So much more work to be done. There is progress, though. There's progress out there in the world. While Texas can be a really rough state, there are some positive things happening in Texas. Since 2012, more than 3/4 of school districts in the state have taken steps to protect students against harassment based on sexual orientation or gender identity. This is huge. This is so exciting. The Texas Observer reports in an article published this week, quote, based on a recommendation from the Texas Association of School Boards, 900 plus districts out of more than 1,200 in the state list sexual orientation and gender identity under examples of prohibited gender-based harassment. That is huge. The recommendation, which was based on guidance from the U.S. Department of Justice, has met with positive reception from local school boards. That is from Carolyn Counts, who is the Director of Policy Service there at the Texas Association of School Boards. Very, very exciting. She went on to say this, quote, "We provide explanatory materials when we release our recommendations. We encourage them to examine those materials and make sure that they do match the district's practice. I don't recall any negative feedback from our members at all. We try to provide materials that protect districts to the extent we can from litigation and keep them aligned with legal requirements." This is going to make schools safer. Make no mistake about it. Adding these words, according to every report that's ever released by GLSEN, and they survey so many thousands of LGBT students who attend school, LGBT students who attend school that have policies that protect for sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, those kids report less harassment. Those kids report being more likely to approach a teacher. Having those policies and letting students know that you have those policies and actually living those policies, you know, having them be present, not just words on a page, but actually affecting practice, they make a difference for these LGBT students. These aren't just words in a handbook. They decrease violence. There's direct correlations here, folks. Direct correlations. Let's look across the seas a bit. We like to cover some international news. Over in Iraq, Iraq's queer community is set to receive support and protection from a new organization. Never would have thought I would have said that. But last month, openly gay Syrian refugee Subhi Nahas joined Samantha Power, who is the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations and an advocate for LGBT rights, to speak before the United Nations Security Council about the targeting of sexual minorities, which has reached unprecedented levels of brutality. Most recently, 9 men and a 15-year-old boy have been executed on charges of sodomy. People living under ISIS terrorism are in desperate need of support, but it's hardly something that many of us know what to do about. That said, founded by Amir Ashour, an Iraqi Kurd living in Malmo, Sweden, Ira Queer is likely the country's first organization dedicated solely to its beleaguered LGBT community. You can read more about them at iraqueer.org. That's iraqueer.org. It is aimed at improving the lives of queer Iraqis. It's an online forum for news and support, with the vast majority of volunteers and members residing in Iraq. Unbelievable. Amir Ashour, who again is this Iraqi Kurd living in Sweden, said this, quote, "Our vision is to create a country where the LGBT community is recognized and enjoys its rights and responsibilities, a country where one's sexual orientation and the person they fall in love with will not affect their lives." Again, go check that out. I mean, how exciting are things like this? Ira Queer, iraqueer.org, Iraq's first ever queer community group. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So exciting. A bit of a snarky story about that Indiana pizza shop. The Indiana pizza shop that raised more than $800,000 in an online campaign for stating it would never cater to a gay wedding. They unknowingly catered. This is a snarky story. They unknowingly catered their first gay wedding this month, and it was all captured on video. Robin Trevino of the Illinois comedy group Gay Co. wanted Memories Pizza of Walkerton, Indiana to be part of his special day, so he drove to the pizza shop, purchased some pizza, and recorded his transaction. The shop is known for being the first business to announce it would not cater a gay wedding following the passage of a March 2015 law that allows Indiana business owners to discriminate against customers based upon personal religious beliefs. That would be the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which we just talked about earlier. Following the passage of the Indiana law, the O'Connor Connor family, who owns this pizza shop, described their pizza shop as a, quote, Christian establishment. They said this last year, quote, if a gay couple was to come in, like say they wanted us to provide them pizza for a wedding, we would have to say no. So Trevino was pleased he was able to be served by O'Connor, and the bill for catering his wedding came to just $27.80. Guests were filmed eating the pizza at Trevino's wedding, which took place in Illinois, and he and his husband were even able to make the pizza part of a very special kiss, and it's in a video, and you can check it out. It's online. Again, it's a little snarky, but it's pretty funny. You can search for it on YouTube. Just type in Memories Pizza Just Catered My Gay Wedding. I love creative activism. I love creative activism. I love people who are getting out there and writing policy, but this is also creative activism, and it cracks me up, and we're all for creative activism. So there you go. So yes, we do have in the state of Texas really supportive things happening for gay kids, but then there's still nutty things happening, and this one comes from Memphis, Tennessee. We don't have a feature called The Story of the Week, but this one just floors me. Lance Sanderson is a gay senior at Christian Brothers High School in Memphis, Tennessee. This is the experience that he just had. After being told last year that he could bring a same-sex date to the homecoming dance at his all-boys Catholic high school this month, another administrator reversed course and told him that bringing another boy to the dance was not allowed for logistical reasons. I love logistical reasons. So despite a change.org petition with more than 23,000 signatures demanding that the Catholic school let him dance and the support of alumni who rallied for him to be able to bring his same-sex date over the weekend, the Christian Brothers administration wouldn't budge. So we hear about this all the time, right? Like the school is not letting a student bring a same-sex partner to the dance. We hear about this. It sucks, but it happens. That's fine. He decided he just wasn't going to go to the dance. Lance Sanderson, this gay senior, he said, I'm just not going to go. He just stayed home. But when he went back to school this week, he was told that he was suspended for a week. This is reported by Logos New Now Next. Although it appears that Lance Sanderson was not given formal documentation of a suspension, New Now Next reports that administrators told him that the school did not, quote, appreciate the unwanted publicity that Sanderson's story had garnered. Sanderson told New Now Next, quote, I am disappointed that I am unable to sit in class today. While many assignments can be reached online, I was going to take two tests today and an in-class timed essay. Tomorrow in school, I was going to meet with admissions representatives from around the country, and they do not visit often. I hope to be welcomed back into a classroom setting soon. He said that he did send a letter to his school documenting the events, wherein he recounts being told that the administrators had 890 other students to worry about and could not deal with him. And he said this in his letter, quote, I haven't done anything wrong and I haven't hurt anybody. I want to be welcomed back to the school building today, and I want this mean-spirited semi-suspension ended so that I can do my classwork like anybody else. So there you go. Apparently, you can get in trouble if you bring a same-sex partner to the dance, and you also, apparently, can get in trouble by not going to the dance. Who knew? Who knew? I didn't know that. A couple other stories out there. You know, there's a lot going on with Matt Damon. I actually talked about this in class tonight, too, and Matt Damon had his comments out there, which people are either misinterpreting or Matt Damon didn't say them very well about whether or not gay actors should stay in the closet, and it's pretty screwy. It's pretty screwy. I will just say this. A couple of the panelists on The View, they do not agree with the statements that Matt Damon made about gay actors during an interview with The Guardian last week, and they took him to task this week on The View. Matt Damon angered many when he wondered aloud whether gay actors injure their careers by coming out publicly, suggesting they could do better in Hollywood by keeping their sexuality a mystery. He maintained in a public apology appearance on Ellen this week that his words, because if you're going to apologize for something gay, you should go on Ellen. He maintained that his words were twisted and taken out of context, even though he basically reassured that he thinks that actors should keep their private lives, aka their sexual orientation, private, something he can't even do himself. Whoopi Goldberg and Raven Simone addressed his comments directly and punched an obvious hole in his logic. Whoopi Goldberg said this, quote, I played a gay woman in The Color Purple, a man in The Associate, and we're actors. We're supposed to be able to play everything and play it convincingly, so I don't think whether you know or think or believe I'm gay has anything to do with what my abilities are. As an actor, that's how I feel. And Raven Simone went on to point out that it's pretty much impossible for an actor to stay closeted by choice and maintain a certain mystique in Hollywood today, given the rise of social media and the public's insatiable desire to out people. Whoopi Goldberg went on to add, quote, people tell your business whether you tell your business or not, and in terms of mystique and all that stuff, you used to be able to make that choice for yourself. So Matt Damon's comments not going over too well. Hey, also appearing on The View this week is Danny Pintaro. So if you do not remember, Danny Pintaro is, he used to be on Who's the Boss. And Danny Pintaro came out, I mean, he came out of the closet years ago. He was forced out of the closet because he was outed by the Inquirer. So Raven Simone was pretty right on target with that. But he came out of the closet this week for being HIV positive. He's been HIV positive for well over a decade. And so he appeared on Oprah's Where Are They Now this week. And he came out of the closet as being HIV positive. And Judith Light said that Danny Pintaro is brave and courageous for revealing his HIV status. And Alyssa Milano was on The Talk this week. And she was also obviously on Who's the Boss. And so she had no idea. She found out, as we all found out, on Oprah's Where Are They Now. And she said this quote, "I hate that it took him so long to feel comfortable, but I'm so glad he's able to express himself now. And I guarantee you, he will change so many lives. I'm so grateful that this disease is now being discussed again, because it feels like there was such a long time that it wasn't. And Danny Pintaro is a beacon of light, and he will be. I am proud." So there you go. Danny Pintaro coming out of the closet as being HIV positive, which was a huge deal, a huge deal. And for those of us who grew up in the 80s, of course we know Danny Pintaro. We grew up with Danny Pintaro. So very exciting there. Our last story of the week is about a billboard, a new West Hollywood billboard. This is fascinating. A new West Hollywood billboard, courtesy of the AIDS Health Foundation, is boldly, you have to see pictures of this, linking online dating and hookup apps, namely Grindr and Tinder, to STDs such as chlamydia and gonorrhea. According to the Washington Post, these billboards have been installed in more than 50 spots around the city last week, including one that is just a few blocks away from Tinder's headquarters. And unsurprisingly, Tinder not so happy about them. The cease and desist letter sent by Tinder's attorney Jonathan Reichman to the AIDS Health Foundation said this quote, "These unprovoked and wholly unsubstantiated accusations are made to irreparably damage Tinder's reputation in an attempt to encourage others to take an HIV test by your organization." But the AIDS Health Foundation is not backing down. They called these apps, this is so fascinating, I've never heard this phrase before. The AIDS Health Foundation is calling these apps, quote, "digital bathhouses for millennials, wherein the next sexual encounter can literally just be a few feet away, as well as the next STD. While these sexual encounters are often intentionally brief or even anonymous, sexually transmitted diseases can have lasting effects on an individual's personal health and can certainly create epidemics in communities at large." Look at that. Digital bathhouses for millennials. Grindr, they had a statement. They said this quote, "We were surprised at the approach the foundation took and paused the campaign in order to speak with them and assess our relationship. As one of the world's largest gay platforms, we take this issue very seriously. At the end of the day, we are all on the same side in this issue and strive to work with our partners and advocacy groups to achieve similar goals. A more connected and informed gay community is a better thing for us all." I don't care what anyone said. I'm stuck on the phrase "digital bathhouses for millennials." That's going to catch on. That's most definitely going to catch on. So there you go. That's all the news we have for you this week. I highly, highly encourage you to stroll on over to equalityutah.org and learn all about the amazing work they are doing in Utah. I mean, you have to approach this work specifically because it takes different strategies to achieve equality. You're not going to use the same strategies here in Ohio that you're going to use there in Utah. So kudos to everybody at Equality Utah, and our thanks to Troy Williams. Our thanks to you all. Tune in next week and we will have Jeff Graham for you, the executive director of Georgia Equality. Looking forward to that. You guys get out there, go make a difference, go do whatever it is that you do to use your voice to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
I miss the words we used to say. I miss the sounds of yesterday. I miss the games we used to play, like gold. I was trapped inside a dream. I couldn't see her next to me. I didn't know she'd set me free, like gold. Something happens when I hold her. She keeps my heart from getting older. short and the nights get a little bit colder. We hold each other. We hold each other. We hold each other. Everything looks different now. All this time my head was down. He came along.